With our thanks to both counsel for their fine briefs and oral arguments today. Our next case this morning is number 054450, the Village of Bensonville et al. Against the City of Chicago and the Federal Aviation Administration.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning, Mr. Karaganis.
Please the court. I am not going to go over the facts and issues that were discussed in the previous oral argument with regard to the St. Johannes matter, but let me just say that the points that I would like to make this morning are as follows. One, the Rest Haven claims against Chicago and the FAA, both on statutory and constitutional grounds, are not moot. Rest Haven claims against the FAA under RFRA, as I indicated, are not moot. The subject matter jurisdiction of the RFRA, and therefore the district court had jurisdiction to, among other things, enter declaratory relief on behalf of Rest Haven.
I would love for you to start there, because it's very hard for me to see how Rest Haven's claims are not moot when Rest Haven participated in the process that was going on before the FAA, succeeded in getting the FAA to approve a modified plan that meant that Rest Haven's cemetery was not going to be touched by this, and so Rest Haven isn't part of the plan. I just don't see where that leaves anything left for Rest Haven to that it legitimately can ask for.
If I may address that, Your Honor.
Please.
The original suit was brought because Rest Haven and the other plaintiffs asserted that the FAA was allowing acquisition and destruction to take place before the FAA putatively ever got involved.
So could I just say, though, I mean, yes, the original suit, but as you well know, mootness is the kind of thing that we need to pay attention to throughout the course of a lawsuit. So even if Rest Haven was appropriately in the case at the outset, when the time comes that they are out, that the FAA has approved the modified plan that excludes them, then how can they still be in?
Because, Your Honor, we are left with the distinct possibility that at some point in the future, Chicago may unilaterally decide that Rest Haven would be useful to it.
That's right.
And then
why don't you wait till then?
I'm sorry?
Why not wait till then?
Well, Your Honor, again, I think...
Why squeal before you're punched?
Well, number one, as I indicated, one of the central issues is whether or not we're protected by the Illinois RFRA. The second is whether we're protected by the First Amendment. FAA's on record
but
in
that's
this case
hypothetical.
Is saying there is no First Amendment protection.
But as Judge Bauer says, I mean, those are all, of course, those are issues which are before us with respect to the St. Johannes Cemetery, but vis-a-vis Rest Haven, that's all hypothetical. A day could come when the city, as you say, decides, or the state of Illinois or somebody else, the federal government, decides to take the land, and you would certainly be entitled to raise any and all of those challenges. But you seem to think that the court has the power to issue a perpetual and unchanging and unchangeable injunction, which is frankly not correct. Courts don't have that kind of power.
Simply on the facts conceded by the FAA, as of this date and time, we would want an order that said, number one, there is a substantial burden on the exercise of religion, or would be in the event of a destruction.
That's an advisory opinion, Mr. Karaganis. That's an advisory opinion, which people have wished that the courts could give them since the beginning of the Republic. And I'm not saying if you wanted to write a law review article about this, or if I wanted to write a law review article about it, there is plenty
Your Honor,
of meat there to look at.
With respect to declaratory relief, there are a number of cases which we've cited in our briefs which state that as long as the defendant continues to recognize or assert the legality of their action, that the plaintiff, despite the fact that the defendant has said that they're no longer going to take the action, is entitled to declaratory relief.
I think that overreads those cases, frankly, because the city doesn't even have the authority to take the action at this point. They'd have to go back to the FAA. They'd have to get a new ROD. It's...
Your Honor, with all due respect, I respectfully disagree. The city's central point, that was why we went to the district court in the first place, is the city says it doesn't have to go to the FAA. The city can go ahead and move its bulldozers.
Well, why don't you wait till they do it?
Because, Your Honor, one of the things we'd like to do at this point in time
I know
is
what
bury
you'd like to do.
Our...
You'd like to clear up everything for all time, forever,
no, but
and ever.
We'd like to continue using the cemetery.
Now, well,
what
you
do
are.
We what? Why?
You are continuing to use the cemetery. Nobody's taking up the cemetery.
So the next family that comes along, we say, do you have protection here? And they say, well, no, the city may decide at any moment because there's no legal protection that's been declared.
The city could decide that tomorrow with respect to any cemetery within the city limits. As the briefs filed in the D.C. Circuit that you had, that the parties had submitted to us indicate, cemeteries have been taken throughout the history of the United States. They mentioned the TVA. They mentioned all sorts of things.
Oh, yes, Your Honor, but as Judge Bauer asked in an earlier oral argument, none of those cemeteries were subject either to the Illinois Religious Freedom Restoration Act or the Federal Religious Freedom Restoration Act. And that is,
suppose there was a cemetery in New Orleans in the area that got flooded by Hurricane Katrina.
Your Honor, I would suggest that... God Almighty is not subject to the Federal Religious Freedom Restoration.
By golly, this is a concession I hadn't heard for a long
time.
Yeah,
it's interesting.
He is a higher authority.
The point, though, is that if the city decided that it was not going to allow the reestablishment of a cemetery in a place that was now going to be designated as a flood zone, I'm just saying that there are situations, and I'm trying to get it away from here to keep it hypothetical, where the compelling interest that anybody's RFRA, the federal RFRA, a state RFRA, has could potentially be satisfied.
Your Honor, again, if the city decided in your hypothetical to prohibit the use of a cemetery because it was in a flood zone, and the religious, and it was a religious cemetery, and the religious adherence to that cemetery and the use of that cemetery wanted relief, they could bring an action under the Illinois Religious Freedom Restoration Act, and the burden would be on the city.
Oh, we understand all of that. I mean, to get back to this point, Rest Haven is excluded from this project at this point, and I don't see why you can't, like anybody else in the country, be required to wait and raise your arguments at the time that a potential taking is once again in the picture.
If there is a...
It's annoying to wait. I don't disagree with you, but people have to wait until there's an actual case or controversy.
If there is a First Amendment violation in the passage of the exception to the Illinois Religious Freedom Restoration Act, that is a current First Amendment harm.
Why is it? Does that mean any church in the state is no longer subject to Article 3's case or controversy?
No, it's...
Requirement?
The case or controversy here is that the defendants say that it is consistent with the First Amendment to exclude from the protection of the Illinois Religious Freedom Restoration Act Rest Haven Cemetery.
I understand
that. That's on the books.
Of course I understand that. But you could go down to any law school class in the country and you could have a debate about whether the First Amendment protects clients like yours or not. And there are definitely two different points of view. They would be argued very vociferously, but it doesn't mean it's a case or controversy.
It is not the end result of the decision that makes it moot or not moot. It's the fact that there is a controversy. If the court decides the controversy one way or another, the court has jurisdiction to decide.
No. You think controversy means disagreement, and controversies, there has to be a concrete adverseness, if, as the court said in Flass versus Cohen. There has to be something that really is going to happen one way or the other. And you, at the moment Rest Haven was withdrawn from this, maybe Rest Haven wishes it was still in the pool, because that way you would be in the same position as St. Johannes.
No, what we would like is the peace of mind of saying that our First Amendment and RFRA rights have been protected, and we believe we're entitled to declaratory relief on that. If I might, Your Honor, to go, and again, the question with regard to federal RFRA is whether or not, with regard to Rest Haven, beyond the mootness point, whether or not there is district court jurisdiction or court of appeals jurisdiction.
And this is an issue that's currently pending before the D.C. Circuit, right?
The jurisdictional issue is not, Your Honor.
Well, but the merits issue about the federal RFRA...
The merits issue of federal RFRA is pending before the D.C. Circuit. Yes, Your Honor.
The argument was about a month ago, if I'm not mistaken.
The argument was on May the 5th, Your Honor.
Yeah.
Yes. And the merits issue on federal RFRA is pending before the D.C. Circuit. The question is with regard to Rest Haven and with regard to anybody else, is the RFRA a command by Congress, or is a congressional direction to have the contested facts of a case tried out in a federal district court, or indeed the contested matter of federal RFRA?
You know, this argument here is an amazing one to me, because as I understand it, you think that when there are contested facts, administrative agencies are constitutionally not entitled to find those facts and then have review in the Article III Court of Appeals. And I have to say, that would pretty much undo the administrative state, because
we agree, Your Honor.
Administrative agencies regularly make, whether it's the Federal Trade Commission on mergers or whether it's the SEC on whether somebody should continue to have his broker's license, or whether it's...
Absolutely.
I mean, that's
If you look at our brief, we say that to the extent...
Where has the Supreme Court given you reason to think that it wants to overrule the administrative state?
We haven't suggested that the Supreme Court overrule the administrative state.
But the Supreme Court has upheld it, and so you're asking us to...
Your Honor, with all due respect, the Shore case and others have said that there are circumstances where Article III commands that it be district court jurisdiction, but second... Concomitant with the direction of what court has jurisdiction is a question of whether or not the agency doing the adjudication, the non-Article III adjudicator, is following procedures that are consistent with the proper exercise of the reviewing court's Article III jurisdiction. You've got a situation here, admitted for case sake of discussion, that the decision maker here was in part compensated for the result of approving a runway, that the decision-making personnel had previously worked for one of the opposing parties on the very matter here, that the adjudicator staff...
I assume the D.C. Circuit would be happy to hear those arguments.
Because, and again, Your Honor, that's why we cited the...
If there's a flaw in due process at the agency level, the Court of Appeals is entirely competent to address that flaw.
But, Your Honor, that's why we cited the McNary case. The McNary case is, and if I may, I want to make sure I reserve 5 minutes for...
The white light will turn on for you.
The McNary case says that, and this was supported by the American Bar Association in an amicus brief, where the contested matters are such that they cannot be provided in an appellate record or developed in an appellate record properly, it is not for appellate court jurisdiction. It is proper for district court jurisdiction, even where there is a statute that normally provides that there will be appellate court jurisdiction. We have just such a case here. And again, I would be pleased to be educated by the court. What happens when an adjudicator helps write the brief for one of the parties, is paid... by, and it admits for purposes of the debate, is paid for reaching a certain kind of decision and has withheld thousands of documents from the appellate record, which we can't get at, that is of relevance to the substantive decisions that are at issue? How do we put that before the judiciary? And I suggest to you the only way we put that before the judiciary is through a district court proceeding.
Why
where,
don't
as
you
McNary
tell the
says,
Court of Appeals that there was a flaw in the creation of the record? You can proffer things. You can tell the Court of Appeals things
Honor,
were withheld. You can tell the Court of Appeals that there was a conflict of interest.
An allegation is just that. It is not valid as proof, and the Court of Appeals can't accept it as proof.
The Court of Appeals can hear it as something that is a matter that needs to be looked into, and it can remand to the agency to look into it.
But what is of here is the agency denies it. The agency denies it from...
So you have a dispute. The Court of Appeals can decide. Do you think courts of appeals just automatically lie down and play dead when agencies deny
no,
something?
With all due respect, I think it raises contested fact issues which the Court of Appeals are institutionally not capable of
and
dealing with.
So they
with.
Remand to the agency.
Again, if the mere allegation that there's been wrongdoing justifies an appellate remand to the agency, that's news to me. What we have here is a dispute of fact that the agency is engaged in wrongdoing. The agency has admitted for purposes of pleading purposes that it's true, but for purposes of whether or not it is true, they deny it. So the only place to have that discovered and tried out is in a district court proceeding. Your Honor, the last point I want to get to is the question of what we regard, and again, using somewhat religious terms, the jurisdictional limbo in which the district court placed us on the funding issue. And we have a funding issue with regard to the AIP funds, which we say is properly in the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit. The FAA says is not within the jurisdiction of the D.C. Circuit. You've seen the briefs on that. We have another group of funds called PFC funds, of which there are $1.3 billion at issue. Those haven't been decided upon yet, but they have been applied for. There is a statute that says the administrator cannot award the funds. It's 47106C1B. The administrator cannot award the funds unless he determines or she determines that there are no alternatives to the environmental destruction at issue. That decision has yet to be made. The Old Town decision of this court is right on point. What we're saying is that one of two alternatives under Old Town. Either the destruction should not be allowed to go forward pending that funding decision, in other words, where the $1.3 billion, if the FAA wants to award the $1.3 billion, or alternatively, the city of Chicago should disavow the $1.3 billion. That's the teaching of Old Town, and we think Old Town is directly on point, not just on the AIP funds, but on the inchoate PFC obligation, which is essential and is no dispute is essential to the construction of phase one of this plan. For all of those reasons, Your Honor, we respectfully suggest that the decision of the district court be reversed and the matter be remanded for trial of those issues.
Thank you, Mr. Karaganis. Here now for Mr. Aggregard.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Todd Agard, representing the federal appellees. I'm sharing my time this morning with Benna Solomon. I'll take 15 minutes. She'll take five. Benna represents the city. The issues in this case are simple, and they involve jurisdiction. There are two sets of appellants here, and I think it's important to keep them separate because they have entirely separate claims. There's the Rest Haven plaintiffs and the villages. Both were dismissed for lack of jurisdiction, and appropriately so. Rest Haven, as I think the colloquy this morning has pretty well established, if it wasn't already well established before, there's simply no problem with Rest Haven anymore. They got what they wanted out of the administrative process. If there was a future claim, which seems to be what they're pegging their arguments on, that there could be some future threat to Rest Haven Cemetery, Article 3 demands that they wait until there is that threat to bring their suit. But I think it's also important to note that if there was a future threat, it would have its own set of facts. And an analogy was drawn this morning to saying that, well, these claims are before the D.C. Circuit as to the St. Johannes plaintiffs. But if you look at the briefing in the D.C. Circuit, the one thing that comes out of the briefing on the religious challenge to the relocation of the St. Johannes Cemetery is that it's a very, very fact-intensive, case-specific inquiry. And the idea that this court can engage in such an inquiry or the district court can engage in such an inquiry purely in the hypothetical about what might arise in the future, I think just demonstrates why there's a clear Article 3 impediment to reaching Rest Haven's claims at this juncture. Moreover, as Judge Wood has aptly summarized, the fact that there may be some theoretical legal disagreement as to the import of the O'Hare Modernization Act certainly is not in itself make this a justiciable controversy. With that said, I think I'll move on to the village's claims. The village's stated two claims in the proposed second amended complaint. The first is alleges violations of an amalgamation of different environmental statutes. They mainly on appeal press their NEPA argument. And then they have another claim that's kind of a combination of Article 3 and RFRA. Both of those claims fail for lack of jurisdiction because they contravene two different jurisdictional limitations on judicial review of FAA orders. First, the jurisdiction of the Court of Appeals over FAA orders is exclusive in the Court of Appeals, and the district court does not have jurisdiction. Moreover, there is a final agency action requirement for challenging FAA orders. Here,
so perhaps you can put Mr. Karaganis's mind at ease about how one raises claims about flaws in the FAA's own processes.
Well,
he claims that the courts of appeals are incapable of addressing the types of arguments that concern his clients in this case.
Which is a rather ironic assertion, given that if you look at their briefs in the D.C. Circuit, they have, in fact, made precisely the argument that they tried to make in the district court here. And so they're, and as the court knows, there's been argument in this case, and there may be a decision any day from the D.C. Circuit. Those claims are being adjudicated at the petitioners, at their insistence, in the D.C. Circuit. And so they are themselves an illustration of how those claims are adjudicated. And as Your Honor pointed out, if there were some defect in the administrative proceedings, the answer is not to create jurisdiction outside of the statute in the district court, but to have a remand that corrects whatever deficiencies the Court of the D.C. Circuit identifies in the administrative proceedings. Now, our position, of course, is that there weren't any such defects, but that is being adjudicated currently in the D.C. Circuit at the petitioner's argument. Now, the other problem, of course, is that they filed their claims here challenging FAA funding decisions before any FAA funding decision had been made. Their petition for review in the D.C. Circuit, at least insofar as it challenges the letter of intent, does not suffer from that defect. And to the extent that the Court of Appeals and the D.C. Circuit finds there is no jurisdiction over the challenges to the letter of intent, it's not because those claims belong in the district court, but because the D.C. Circuit may find that they do not belong in any court at all. So the idea that there is some sort of, as the plaintiffs have referred to, jurisdictional keep away or shell game going on is simply not true.
Because of lack of finality? I mean, why? I mean, surely there must come a time that they can challenge this.
Our position, and if you look at the D.C. Circuit, actually issued a sua sponte order addressing this as well. Our position is that many FAA funding decisions, but in particular a letter of intent, which is really just a planning document, is not a challengeable FAA order because Congress, in part because Congress has implicitly limited who can challenge such document decisions. In addition, if you look at our arguments in the D.C. Circuit, there are a number of other jurisdictional impediments. But finally, the plaintiffs this morning, and somewhat in their briefs, have argued that they have to be able to challenge a future PFC decision that might be made by the FAA. That can't happen because of the final agency action requirement. But in particular, there's even an easier way to resolve that issue because plaintiff's argument is that the FAA failed to make a decision or still has yet to make a decision on this factor. It's 47106C1B. That's the focus of their argument on this PFC. If you look at our appendix on pages 109 and 110, the FAA has made that decision already, and if the plaintiffs wanted to challenge that decision, they could have done so in their petition for review challenging the record of decision. So that decision has been made. There is not going to be a future 47106C1B decision by the FAA. So if the plaintiffs are waiting for some future decision, they're going to be waiting a long time because the FAA's position is that it has fully complied with that statute and made that finding, and that will apply to the entire O'Hare modernization. One more thing is that I think that this court's decision in the Suburban O'Hare Commission that we cite in our brief is really instructive on a lot of the jurisdictional issues here. And in fact, it involved the same counsel for the plaintiffs, and the villages were part of the Suburban O'Hare Commission that was the petitioner in that case. In that case, the petitioners argued, we really belong in the district court because we have legal theories that don't really fall under the exclusive jurisdiction of the Court of Appeals. And this court very firmly rejected that position and said, it doesn't matter what your legal theory is. What matters is that you're challenging an FAA decision. Exclusive jurisdiction over such claims is in the Court of Appeals. So finally, in sum, even if this court were to reverse, there would be nothing left for the district court to do. Rest Haven got what it wanted. It's been excluded from the O'Hare Modernization Project, and the villages have had their day in court in the D.C. Circuit, unless the court has any further questions.
Thank you. We'll hear now from Ms. Sullivan.
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the court. As proposed 5 years ago, the O'Hare Modernization Program required the city to acquire Rest Haven Cemetery. But Rest Haven objected, and the FAA approved an amended airport layout plan that works around Rest Haven. As the FAA recognized in its record of decision, this means that the graves located at Rest Haven will not have to be relocated. The cemetery will remain available for future burials, and access to the cemetery for visitation and care of the graves will continue.
Now, Ms. Solomon, Mr. Karaganis argues that despite this record of decision by the FAA, the city continues to maintain that it can take this cemetery whenever it wants to for O'Hare modernization. Is that an accurate statement of the city's position?
It is not an accurate representation, but if I could explain what I think Mr. Kerrigan has meant, of course he can clarify if there is any confusion after I am finished. I had heard him to say there was a continuing controversy between the city and Rest Haven about the O'Hare Modernization Act, and in particular the amendment to Illinois RFRA, a controversy over the First Amendment issues that St. John's raises. Those issues are absolutely live as to St. John's, and it is not our position that those issues are moot. It is simply our position that Rest Haven's claim is moot, claim as to either the OMA or the First Amendment, of course. With regard to the city's acquisition, of course, the airport layout plan that the FAA approved as final, that's in its record of decision, works around Rest Haven. In order to change the ALP, we would actually have to go back to the FAA. We can't change an ALP ourselves. So the FAA would have to approve another plan if we were to try to, if we were to decide to acquire Rest Haven for the OMP. So we've got speculation piled upon speculation. This ALP took nearly 4 years to get, and we are building this plan. Work is underway every single day out at O'Hare. We did not appeal the FAA's decision when it excluded Rest Haven, in part because we just have to get on with this, and we are getting on with this. So there is clearly a hypothetical possibility, but thousands of property owners in this city could make that claim. Thousands of property owners abutting O'Hare could make that claim. They could all march into the district court and be concerned that at some point in the future, the city might decide it needs their property to expand O'Hare. But that is not a concrete, ongoing, live controversy, real, actual, and imminent. And all of the other words that describe an actual case or controversy. And as I understand Rest Haven's position, they want an enforceable order, whatever that means, from the district court to protect against the possibility that Chicago might decide Rest Haven is useful. I believe those were Mr. Karaganis's words this morning. In his brief, he puts it in terms of to protect Rest Haven from destruction at some point in the future. It's on page 4 of his opening brief. But the district court correctly ruled that it had no jurisdiction to enter that order. Rest Haven forwarded one claim in the first amended complaint, and that was to seek injunctive and declaratory relief against the city's acquisition and destruction, as they call it, of Rest Haven Cemetery. That claim is moot. Rest Haven did not join the amended complaint, the second amended complaint. It has never forwarded a claim in this litigation that its members don't know whether to go forward with a burial or not. One will read the second amended complaint in vain, looking for any allegation of a chilling effect, of a religious quandary, of any uncertainty about how to conduct their business on a going-forward basis, and that's because the second amended complaint did not include Rest Haven. They simply were not a party to that complaint.
If that's the governing complaint in this case, then I take it Rest Haven at this point must be complaining about something having to do with the first amended complaint.
That's exactly right, Your Honor, and those claims are obviously moot. Those claims aimed at preventing the city from acquiring Rest Haven for the OMP, and that is not going to happen. The FAA has approved a plan that works around Rest Haven. The other claim that I do understand Rest Haven to be making in this litigation, notwithstanding its failure to join the second amended complaint, is that it would have joined the second amended complaint if it had known it couldn't get an enforceable order from the district court. But it can't. It just can't. The doctrine doesn't support that. So if Rest Haven thought it could, with respect, it was just mistaken. But regardless of its motivation for not forwarding further allegations, it did not forward further allegations. The only allegations Rest Haven has before the court were dismissed in the first amended complaint as moot. They are moot, and Rest Haven has no standing to raise further claims. So both, for both of those reasons, we would ask the judgment of the district court be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Solomon. How much time does Mr. Karaganis have? 4 minutes, sir.
If I may, Your Honor, and this is one of the, let me just address some of the assertions made by the Department of Justice. The argument is made that, for example, the issue of improper procedures has been made to the D.C. Circuit. It has been made to the D.C. Circuit with an explicit proviso, in an explicit statement in the briefs, that it is more properly brought before a district court in a district court proceeding per the McNary Doctrine. And we told the Court of Appeals in the D.C. Circuit that, and that, and that is where we stand there, and that is where we stand today. There is no way for the Court of Appeals, this Court of Appeals or any other Court of Appeals, to make findings of fact on disputed facts. It just can't. It's just that's incapable of it. We said that as to the wrongdoing that was alleged, the wrongdoing ought to be the subject of discovery and trial in a district court. We think it ought to be there. And Mr. Alger made a statement that said, don't worry about the future with regard to the billion, more than $1 billion in PFC funds. And he said that the decision with respect to Section 47106 C1B had been made by the FAA at pages 109 to 110 of the FAA appendix in the record of decision. I direct the court's attention to those pages. And what you will find is the decision is made as to the ALP. It is not made as to the project for which PFC funding is being sought. The statute makes a distinction between a plan and a project. The project for which PFC funding is being sought is called the Phase 1 plan. There is no finding anywhere in thousands of pages as to the 47106 C1B requirement for the project. And we have pointed that out to the D.C. Circuit. We pointed out to this court. We can't make the argument to the D.C. Circuit on the PFCs because the decision hasn't been made yet. So in order to have the protection of 47106 C1B on $1 billion of PFCs, the Old Town decision of this court comes right into play. And for the government to say that that decision has been made is somewhat disingenuous. With regard to Sock versus Dole, yes, I was the counsel in Sock versus Dole, and I was the one who went through the various machinations that had to go, do we go to the district court or do we go to the Court of Appeals? As a matter of fact, I think in similar circumstances I would be before Judge Bauer when he was a district judge on similar issues involving the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. That was pre-McNary, and what McNary teaches is as follows.
All you're doing is giving away our ages.
Yes, yes, Your Honor, I'm afraid I am. What McNary teaches is that when there is a quote-unquote exclusive jurisdiction given to the Court of Appeals, there are circumstances in which, because the Court of Appeals is either ill-suited or because a final decision that triggers the Court of Appeals jurisdiction has not yet been made, that district court jurisdiction is appropriate. That's exactly what we're talking about with regard to the 47106 C1B decision with regard to the $1 billion in PFCs for the Phase 1 project. It hasn't been made. We're entitled to the environmental protection until it is made. Now, you were asked, I'm sorry, Judge Wood asked Ms. Solomon, would you try and explain Mr. Karaganis' concern that the city could acquire acquisition before the ALP? We were in here because the bulldozers were primed in 2003 to go forward without regard to the ALP. The ALP might be several years away, the ALP approval, but the position of the FAA and the city is the bulldozers can, first of all, the city can acquire and the city can bulldoze before there's any decision on an ALP. So the fact that there may be some future ALP out there that hasn't been given provides us no protection at all.
But if it's not part of the O'Hare Modernization Act, then none of the arguments about Illinois RFRA or anything make any difference, because then the city would be proceeding under ordinary eminent domain powers, fully subject to Illinois RFRA, fully subject to anything else. I mean, there are cemeteries along the Eisenhower Expressway, and if the city suddenly decided it wanted one, it would have to go through the usual procedures.
The statute doesn't say ALP, Your Honor. It says O'Hare Modernization Act. The city can go out and demolish the Rest Haven Cemetery tomorrow under their theory of the law without any requirement of approval of the ALP before the destruction takes place. So we come back to Number one, we got a statute on the books that takes away our rights, the Section 30 of the Illinois Religious Freedom Restoration Act. Number two, we are subject to acquisition and destruction, regardless of whether or not there's any future ALP, at the city's whim because Section 30 is on the books. And that's what we're seeking a declaration for.
Thank you, Mr. Karygiannis. Our thanks to all counsel in the case, and the case will be taken under advisement.